What's going on, everybody? We're back with another episode of the Rockets Collective. I'm one of your hosts, Brad. Of course, we got my boy Bryce Houston, and we got B. Scott. So we have a fun lineup to talk about today. You know, Reed Shepard, he's been doing his thing. Oprah Shangun and KD, been balling out in the clutch. We'll talk about Amen Thompson a little bit too, and a little bit more stuff. Of course, we always take Q&As. And again, beginning of the show, I want to say this. Throw your questions in the chat. We're going to answer them at the end of the show if we get to them. But yeah, before we dive into Rockets Hoops, I'm going to let B. Scott talk to y'all about Prize Picks really quickly.
So Prize Picks is the best place to win cash while watching sports. It's NBA season. It is Rocket season. And the app is really easy to use. To create a lineup, all you have to do is pick more or less on a few player stats, whether that's Alperen Şengün assists, Kevin Durant points, which is kind of an easy one. Take the over. Spoiler alert. Or if it's Steven Adams offensive rebounds, Amen Thompson blocks, there are a litany of options that you can go to on Prize Picks. Prize Picks is available in 45 states, and Texas is one of them. And I also want to tell you about this new user offer that Prize Picks have. Prize Picks will give you $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. So win or lose, you'll get $50 in lineups. All you got to do is use the promo code Rockets when you sign up today. So that's play $5, get $50 in lineups. We use Prize Picks all the time at my house. My girl was asking me earlier, is Lauri Markkanen good? And I'm like, yeah. So, I mean, and she's doing that because she's trying to get her Prize Pick lineups set up for the day. So you should do it as well.
There you go. Will has a love-hate relationship with Lauri Markkanen. It's probably just a hate relationship based on fantasy basketball last year. But yeah, we'll dive into the Rockets. Reed Shepard, as we know, he started the year slow. We were on this show itself in the trade machine. We had Will breaking down to everybody why it wasn't even logical to even attempt to try to trade Reed. But the fact that that was even a topic was annoying. But Reed has played himself out of the trade machine, right? So I'm going to actually go back to Brandon because, you know, me and Will, we talk all the time about Reed Shepard. So I'm actually curious to hear your thoughts on what you've seen. You know, I'll say this really quickly. You know, his six-game sample, 15.7 points a game, 2.8 assists. What's eye-popping, too, is the 2.3 steals a night. What's also eye-popping, of course, is the 52.6% from three on over six attempts a night. So he has been hooping. He's also got a 9.5 point differential while he's out there. So I got to give him all the credit in the world, but I want to hear what you got to say about Reed Shepard.
Man, he's been incredible. One of my major points going into the season was, what if one of the – forget both of them. What if one of the two number three overall picks kind of plays like one or gets closer to it? And it's not like you really need them to, because that's not the role that they necessarily have, like whatever it is that you expect from a number three overall pick to be the franchise player or whatever it is. That's not what those guys are on this team. But what Reed Shepard is showing you is that – he is a valuable piece off of the bench, not just the shooting, but just the overall like game and awareness. It feels like it's almost night and day from where you might have expected it to be earlier or where it was earlier in the year. Like, he's playing his way into, and obviously you have to have a much larger sample size to have this conversation, but he's of the talent and is playing of the quality right now that could get him into six man of the year type of conversations. I'm not saying he's going to win it. I'm not saying that he's even the favorite for it, but he's playing that type of ball, and he has that type of skill, that type of talent, that type of ability. One of my favorite Reed Shepard plays, and look, we don't got to talk about him tripping Desmond Bane and nothing like that, because I thought that was hilarious, as pitiful as it was. But one of my favorite Reed Shepard plays was, I think it was the Portland game, where like as soon as he gets in the game, he's got like a touchdown pass to, I'm trying to remember if it was Tari or KD or.
It was KD. Tari. No, it was KD.
It was KD.
No, it was both. Because there was a game where he got the steals on the ground and threw an outlet to Tari as well.
He
did both. It was Tari and KD.
So there's that one. But I'm talking about it. So that one's later, I think. Because the first, I'm talking about as soon as he said go, first thing he does when he enters the game.
Okay, that was the KD.
Against Portland. Yeah, that was the KD. Yeah.
And those are the type of moments where I'm like looking and saying, okay, there's a little bit more here than just go over there and stand there and shoot and don't F it up and turn the ball over and don't be a cone on defense and all these other type of things that we like maybe knock Reed Shepard for like where his game is lacking. I think the way that he's played over the last several games have made you focus more on what he is and less so on what he is not.
Yeah. Will, I'll let you jump into Tarik Shepherd. I'll go last. Again, I've heard it on the Brown and Will show all the time, but I'll let you go.
Yeah. excuse me. I think a lot of the conversations surrounding Tarik Shepherd were premature. We were talking about him like he was a guy who was in year three, year four, and had been struggling all those times. And then you look at it, and it's like, this guy has barely played. So I'm not really sure we're coming to any definitive conclusions. I'm gonna circle back to this when we talk about Amen Thompson. But yeah, he hadn't played, right? I said it last year. I said it earlier. He's played, I want to say 50-something games last year, like 55, 58 games last year. And of those games where he played, I want to say like 8 of them were with him in 20-plus minutes. So, like, he wasn't playing last year. He wasn't in the rotation. We were an incredibly deep roster. They did not have a lot of room for another guard to come in between Fred, between Jalen, you can say what you want to say about Aaron Holiday. He's an NBA player. Amen Thompson was developing as a guard as well. There just wasn't that many, you know, guard minutes to go around, especially for the guy who, it's a rookie. And, like, I don't know why it was surprising to anyone who claims to watch basketball that an undersized guard took a second to adjust to the NBA speed and physicality and wasn't a star player from day one. Like, it sounds ridiculous that I'm saying this right now because it is. Like, it was ridiculous to me. I saw the amount of people, like, just giving up and saying this guy was not worth being picked. And we're like, bro, we're only 40 games into his career. He's barely played in those 40 games. Like, there's no way you can say that. And then people did the same thing this season where we were 5 games into the season and everybody was saying, oh, he got to get traded and he's not the guy. We got to bust. And I'm like, bro, y'all are drawing all these conclusions and he ain't even played 82 games yet. Like, it's just no way that you have enough sample size to determine that, especially when we know. And, like, this thing that gets me with Rockets fans, I get why, like, other fan bases may not know. Dude, we have drafted top 4 consecutive seasons. Y'all know what it's like. Y'all know it takes time. Jabari Smith Jr. was awful. Genuinely awful his rookie season. Like, I think he might have been the worst starter in the NBA. Like, he was that bad. And we know he's went from that to, like, I think he's genuinely good now. He's a starting caliber wing on a team that's going to try to win a championship this year. That is real development. That is real progression in his game. And if we all just judge Jabari off of those first 40 games of his career, bro, he'd been gone by now. And he had way more opportunity than Tarik Shepherd did. So it's just like, I don't get how we got to the point in time people were giving up on a guy without him even playing a full season yet. And so now that we've given him some time, he's starting to figure some things out. It looks really good. And my whole thing is just, don't, because he's still young, right? He's still growing. There's going to be a game where he looks rough. There's going to be a stretch where he looks rough. And what I don't want to have happen is, see, I told you he's a bust, or, you know, maybe he isn't that good. Like, no, bro, he's 21 years old. Like, he's going to have stretches where he looks rough. That's what's going to happen. He's going to have to grow and develop in his game. And just gotta be patient with him. That, you know, that's one of my things with him. Just be patient with it. It's looking good right now. I hope it continues to keep that way. But just being realistic, there's going to be stretches where he looks rough. And when that happens, just like, actually, this is what comes with the territory. This is the process we got to get through to get to where we want Tarik Shepherd to be, which I think is one day going to be the starting point guard of this Houston Rockets team. So, yeah.
I'll say this. Will is 100% right. You have to expect these guys to have off games every once in a while. What I like about Tarik Shepherd's recent off game, if you want to call the game against Portland an off game, you know, B. Scott mentioned it. He came in through a dime to KD, you know, a quarterback pass. But he was 3 of 9 from 3 in that game, 5 of 12 from the field. Shot wasn't falling, right? But he still found a way to put up 13, 3 and 3 and had 4 steals. You know, he made his impact felt. He was getting – it seemed like he was getting his hands on every single loose ball. So props to Tarik Shepherd in that way. And again, he's just been playing an all-around game. I had to just look it up. He's 19th in the NBA in steals per game right now at 1.6. And as we know, he's not playing heavy minutes. So that's how good he's been, the defensive liability, at least. That's how good he's been, you know. So it's good to see him playing a lot better on that end. And, yeah, it's very, very, very good to see. So I can't complain. If he keeps playing like this, he might talk his way into – I know we're talking about Tower. He might talk his way into some 6th man of the year talks. And it may be too premature. It probably is. But, and man, he's been playing that good.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to add real quick because I do think that if he plays like this, if this is sustainable, and we just kind of have to play the wait and see game and see how sustainable it is. Like Will's point, He's going to have bad stretches. Like, how consistent is he going to be? That's the wait and see part. But I do want to speak just real quick before we move on this to Will's point about the patience of the fan base and how people are wilding out sometimes when a player, a young player, doesn't work out immediately. I do think specifically with Reed Sheppard that perhaps a lot of Rockets fans or some Rockets fans lost sight of the luxury that was Reed Sheppard. But by the time that you're drafting Reed Sheppard, you've already just had the best turnaround in the NBA. You weren't a playoff team yet, but you were about to be. Already had the greatest turnaround in the NBA from year to year the season before. And then Reed Sheppard comes in, and he's a number three overall pick, but a young rookie on a team that's on its way to the number two seed. And to, you know, do what it did throughout the season in the playoffs, that's a luxury. Normally, and this was the case, kind of to Will's point, normally when you draft a guy that early, a lottery guy, and this was the case for the Rockets early on in the process in the Jalen Green days, the Jabari Smith days, when you draft a guy that early on in the process, you are putting a certain heightened expectation on a guy coming in, right? Like you want him to be the franchise. You're waiting on the franchise to turn around. By the time Reed Sheppard get here, they're already doing the turnaround part. And so they had the luxury of allowing him to develop instead of just throwing him into the fire and allowing him to be terrible the way Will's talking about Jabari was and the struggles that we saw even from Jalen Green, his rookie year. And look, I mean, he was given the keys immediately, right? And for a reason. So I feel like the issue is that people lose sight of circumstance and don't really consider like what the plan is. Like, okay, we don't have to rush this Reed Sheppard thing because we got a team, right? And we can kind of slowly and gradually allow him to become whatever player that he's going to be.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Will. You're about to say something.
I was going to say, let's just use a real life example, right? Because I think some people kind of, you got to relate it to real life. Let's say you're playing a video game and I want you to be good at this video game. How you get better at the video game is you practice. You play the game over and over and over again, and you get better at it. Now, what if I told you I need you to get better at this video game, but you can't play it? Right? You can't play the video game I want you to get better at. How would you get better at the game? Like that, you know what I'm saying? That's what Reed Sheppard was in last season, where we're like, we want you to improve, but you're not going to play. You don't get to work through your what you got to work through in real time on the court. We're trying to win games. And that's not a Rockets problem. That's just the life of the NBA, bro. You get out to a good team that's trying to win basketball games. If you can't contribute immediately, you're just not going to play. Like that's what it is. But that's the situation Reed was in, right? Because we didn't use our draft pick to get him. He didn't go to the Silas Rockets, where he could just go and start from day one. And like, I think that's what kind of helped Jabari, was Jabari was able to start from day one and he got to work through what was plaguing him in his rookie season. He got to work through that in real time. Reed Sheppard didn't get that opportunity. And so it's like, how should us as fans expect it to look if we're not even giving him the opportunity to grow? Like, there's no way we should have expected him to go out there and been a star from day one, you know, like that rarely ever happens, right? The only time that ever happens is like with Luka, for example, or like who's another guy who came in just off rips, was like an all-star. I'm trying to Wimby. I, you know, I was gonna say Wimby, right? A guy who just
Blake
comes
Griffin
in
day was one. Another one too.
You said who?
Blake Griffin was an all-star day one too.
Yeah. That's yeah, like man. You gotta be somebody like that, which I mean, unless you're telling me you thought Reed Sheppard was gonna be Luka Doncic. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. So that was just my thing. It's just like it was just no room for him to even grow through his mistakes on the court. So it's like, how could we expect him to be better if we're not even giving him the opportunity to grow? And now you're seeing it this season where like, unfortunately the Fred VanVleet injury has forced him to have to grow up a little bit quicker now. It kind of is putting him closer to the situation he would be on if he was on a team that was bad and started from day one. Cause like now we need him. And we saw him, he took those lumps early on, those first like five-ish games of the season where it was rough, took those lumps. And then he's turned a heel. And like I said, I don't want to make it sound like he's just good now. I think he's going to struggle at some point in time. Just being realistic, I think there's going to be a stretch of games where something's going to, like somebody said, yeah, the game plan, like there's another adjustment he has to prepare himself for. So like, I don't think we're just out of the woods. Like it's going to be a process still. But we're seeing the results of what happens when you let this guy work through it in real time. And it looks really good. I mean, I could argue to you right now, he's playing, not even argue, I think he is. He's been playing like the third best team player on the team right now. Behind KD and Shingun, I don't think there's anybody's playing better basketball than Reed Sheppard right now. And you know, and that, imagine if I said that opening night. Imagine if I said on opening night, Fast forward 2 weeks, this will be the best, third best player on the team. Y'all would call me crazy, but here we are. So that's just my thing with it, man. Y'all got to be patient with it.
I agree. And again, Will said it time and time again. I don't think he's played 20 games yet with over 20 minutes played. And
I don't think he has. I think he's played 15.
Yeah, rookies, of course, need the luxury to play through their mistakes, but especially small guards. You can look at, you know, historically, look at Steve Nash, like, for instance. I'm not calling Reed Steve Nash, but he had a slow start. Those smaller guards, it takes a minute to get used to the NBA game speed. And as Will mentioned, the real-life example, you're not going to get better if you're not going to get the reps, right? And he didn't have the luxury to play through his mistakes last year. Now he's being thrown in the fire. And again, it sucks, obviously, losing Fred VanVleet. This team, it might mess around, be undefeated right now if they had Fred VanVleet. But it forces Reed to really get into the action, and that's actually better for the Rockets long-term. He's going to get so many more reps now. And as we've seen already, he's put together a really good 5-6-game stretch where we have Will, and I agree. He's looking like the third best player on the team at this point in time. That's how good he's been playing. So, again, I got to shout out Reed. Again, it's important. Stay patient with these young guys. And that's all I really got on Reed Shepherd. I want to say one more thing
before you move.
Go ahead.
So I looked it up, and I'm pulling up one more number real quick just so I can contextualize what I'm about to say.
While you're looking at it, I do want to add eight.
Go ahead.
8 games of 20 minutes or more this year, 5 games of such last year.
That's what I was going to say.
So whatever
I pulled up, he's played, like you said, he's played 8. He's played 13 games of 20 minutes or more, and of those 8.
Yeah. Okay, I got you.
I'm pretty sure you're looking at just this season, right?
Yeah. Well, he said this year and last year.
Yeah. So eight this year, 5 last year.
Okay. 13. So that's what I was gonna say. And then 8 of them came from this season.
Yeah.
Meaning it, 5 of them. He played 5 total games of his entire NBA career last season, where were 20 minutes or more. That's ridiculous. To contextualize that, the number one pick in last year's draft class, or Reachover's draft class, Zachary Richter has played 70 games with 20 minutes or more. Number two was Alex Sarr, who's played 78 games. Number three was Reed. Number four is Stephon Castle, who's played 79. So the numbers I said were 70, was it 78 and 79? And then Reed has played 13.
Yeah.
So like let that sink in for a second.
And the proper context with that, right? What is the key distinction and difference between the teams that those rookies last year, they went to bad teams that are starting basically from zero, where the Rockets,
they drafted those guys
with
their own picks. Those were like the Spurs didn't get Stephon Castle with another team. That was their pick. The Rockets were the only team in that top. Honestly, shoot, might have been the only team in the lottery. Oh, no, I lied because the Spurs had pick 8 as well. I want to say outside of us and the Spurs, we might have been the only team in the lottery that drafted there without our own pick. Don't fact check me on that, but I know like the Hornets did, the Blazers did.
Even the Spurs were behind because they had just got Wimby. The Rockets were on an accelerated timeline in comparison. Even if you include them, like it's a very unique situation that the Rockets and Reed Shepherd entered into when they came together.
Yeah. And I want to say this before we jump to the next topic too. When I was talking about, I hope this shows on screen. Yeah, Reed Shepherd right now, he's looking like, he's playing like the third best player on the team. He's not the third best player on the team. I'm giving that to Amen Thompson every day of the week. We're going to talk about Amen Thompson later in the show.
I think he's playing like the third best player.
He's not the third best player on the team. He's not Steve Nash. I was saying Steve Nash started slow. Look at his first year. He averaged 3 points. Only played 10 minutes a night. Take some time to adjust. I'm just saying Reed Shepherd and Steve are small guards.
Hey, Brad.
Sometimes it takes some time to adjust. So
this is what happened when you get aggregated, dog. This is what happened when you get aggregated.
Yep, that's true. Someone can clip that and be like, yeah, he tripping. But yeah, luckily we're on live, so I can clear it up. But let's jump to Operant Şengün and Kevin Durant in the clutch. I have the stats pulled. I'll wait for my segment to pull the stats. Actually, no, I'll say the stats right now. Şengün, he's hit the most clutch shots in the NBA. If you're looking at the last 2 minutes in the fourth and OT, scores between like 0 and 3. Operant Şengün's your guy. Him and Keontae George. Shout out to Keontae George. He's also been hooping. But to have a guy like Kevin Durant, obviously he's 4 of 6 in these situations I just mentioned. We saw it on display against Orlando. I was lucky enough to get that game. It was crazy. But you got a guy like KD who can get a bucket anytime in the clutch. You also got your other superstar who can do it as well. It's such a luxury to have. So I have to give Şengün all the credit in the world. He hit some clutch shots in the first game against OKC. They didn't get the W, but again, what, 1.5 seconds left against Orlando. You throw it down to Shangun, he hits the hook. Honestly, in my opinion, should have been an and one, but it's cool. He got the bucket. Then he also had a nice little spinning float in overtime as well. So, and I'll let Will talk about that behind the back pass. But amazing play from those two in the clutch. KD, again, it's remarkable, like insane play. Like the shot making ability, he hit a cross snatch for the three. I don't know about y'all, I was going crazy in the stands. But yeah, that's all I got to say. That it's just, it's so fun to watch.
Bro, like, I'm not gonna have much, because it's just like, as somebody who talks a lot, I'm speechless after watching the team struggle to get shots late in games, or struggle to kind of find it late in games last year and in previous years, and the question of the team being, who's your closeout? I sometimes thought it was even overplayed, but then you get into a close game or a game that really mattered, and then you'd be like, oh man, this actually kind of is a thing. They could use a closer. And then the part that is, like, you know what you're going to get from KD, or I think KD is just about on brand and on along the lines of the expectation of what you would find when you get KD, and in some cases, even better. I actually like the fact that, you know, earlier in the season in games where KD didn't have it, that you were talented enough and ready enough to kind of pick him up. But here we are seeing exactly why it was that they went and got Kevin Durant. If that needed to be explained to you, or if you needed more visual evidence that goes beyond the previous 18 years, here you go. So, thanks, KD, and you're welcome, I suppose he would say. But aside from that, the Alperen Şengün piece of it is the big part. It's like, we were talking about they need a closer, and it turns out one of the dudes has been on the team the whole damn time, got some closing ability, you know, got some clutch ability. And that shot, right, against the Magic, another game, another example of, like, you know, kind of just fighting through it. I said this on my podcast, like, the Magic were hooping. Like, I didn't have as much. There was obviously things that you could pick apart about the game and things that you could criticize when it came to the Rockets. But I was also like, man, they out there dunking on them boys, and like, they wild. Like, they're crazy athletic. They're shooting the ball. I mean, the thing about the Magic was they couldn't score to save their lives in previous years. And now it looks like they can put the ball in the basket. They still play defense at a pretty high level. And the Rockets just fought through it. And then they relied on their closers at the end. Alperen Şengün, Kevin Durant coming up in the clutch. Like, it's pretty much everything you could ask for at this point, man. So I'm very pleased with what I'm seeing.
I want to say this real quick before I jump to Will, because, again, I want to throw a KD stat out there. NBA.com categorizes, you know, clutch buckets a little differently, but in 40 minutes in the clutch, KD's averaging, he's got 26 points. He's shooting 8 of 12 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3. And that is remarkable efficiency. For reference, Jalen Green last year shot 26 of 70 in clutch situations, right? So that's a night and day difference already. That's a night and day difference. And it's obvious why they made this move, right? So having KD is the reason why. And I want to start your message, Chetman, and I want to show it. There's a reason why the Rockets used to make a bunch of fake comebacks. They were a good team, and they would make comebacks, but they couldn't close. A lot of those fake comebacks will be closed this upcoming season, because you have a closer in Kevin Durant. You also have, of course, Alperen Şengün, who's showing the ability to close as well. But yeah, just wanted to show that stat to show how important it was.
You said what was the number?
He shot 26 to 70 from the field in the clutch last year. Jalen did.
Yeah. Do you know what it was the year before that?
Huh? The year before? I'll look it up right now. While you go. Go ahead. I'll look it up right now.
That's funny. No, anyway, that was the point I was going to make, was just that I think there's really no way to make this point without it being a slight to Jalen Green, but I feel like I don't want it to come off that way, but that's probably the only way. You have to directly compare the two. Like, Kevin Durant was brought here to do what Jalen Green did not do. Because if Jalen was doing it, you wouldn't trade him for Kevin Durant. So, but yeah, like, that was the difference. That's what it was. There were a lot of games last season where the Rockets, like you said, couldn't finish the comeback, or the fourth, we were in a tight lead since the game in the fourth quarter, and another team had a better closure or better execution down the stretch than we did. And that was the difference, right? Because we didn't really get blown out a lot last year. It was a lot of just games that came down to like some split second decisions. And when it's, we said 26 to 70, is that what you said?
26 for 70.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's, I mean, you're going from 26 for 70 to Kevin Durant. Like, that's a pretty big difference there, right? Like, you talk about a guy who hit clutch bucket after clutch bucket in that Magic game. He did the same thing against the Bucks. He's someone that I forgot what game it was. It was one game this season. It might have been the Bucks game, but it was one game where, like, the Rockets' clutch time offense was literally just give Kevin Durant the ball. And it was just like, he brought us home. And it's like, that's a game we don't win. Like, that Magic game, we just simply do not win that game last season. That's a game we lose. We probably make a valiant effort to come back and close the gap, but we're not able to get over the hump the way we do without Kevin Durant. And, like, yeah, that's why you trade for him, even though the fact that he's not necessarily, you know, 2014 MVP KD or finals MVP from the Warriors years, he's not necessarily that guy no more. He's still a really good basketball player. He averaged 27 per game on 64-2 shooting last year. Like, I think he's averaging, like, what, 25 on what's the efficiency looking like this year?
He's got around a 63 true shooting, I want to say. He's in that
position. Let's look it up. Kevin Durant is averaging 26 points per game on 63 true shooting. He is shooting 51, 40, 89 splits. He is 1% away from a 50, 40, 90 season. Like, at 37 years old, is that all he's
37. Yeah, 37.
Like, that's ridiculous.
It looks a lot the way that, you know, I know you said he's not MVP Kevin Durant. He's not Finals MVP Kevin Durant. Obviously, really he good. Can't be, but it looks eerily similar. Like, it looks a lot like it the way it used to, the way it always has. That's the incredible part about it, bro.
Yeah. 26 yeah. points per game on that efficiency, bro. Like, so it's just like, that's the difference, man. And then you obviously pair that up to next to Alperen Şengün, who is, I've been saying it, man, in terms of, not saying he is a top 10 player, but in terms of how he's played this season, oh yeah, he's definitely played like a top 10 player in the league this year. He's just been on a different level offensively and defensively. I think that's one thing people don't really take into consideration when they look at his stat line. They don't realize that he's putting up all those points, rebounds, and assists while also being one of our better defenders. And that's crazy to say, but it's true. He's one of our, of this team, there, he's one of the better defenders on a team full of good defenders. And so, like, yeah, he's played like a top 10 player in the league, in my personal opinion. So you pair in Kevin Durant with Alperen Şengün. I mean, it's, you get games like the Magic game where it's like, you kind of pick your poison. One of them is going to walk you down.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll say this. He's definitely playing like a top 10 player, in my opinion. You look at, you know, his game log as a whole, he's got at least 15, 5, and 5 in every game. But you look at the points, now, if you look at the rebounds and assists for players his age or younger, only Magic and Oscar Robertson have put up, you know, 5 rebounds and 5 assists to start a season in the same time period that Şengün has. It's a crazy stat. Şengün's averaging, what, 23, 10, 7, 1, and 1? If you want to just round down, look at the guys averaging 20, 10, 5, 1, and 1 to start a season at Şengün's age. It's just Giannis and Charles Barkley. That's it. So he's put himself in some crazy company, and he's playing very consistent. And even his off games look very well, really good. And I'll say this again, because I was at the last game. That was the worst start I've ever seen Alperen Şengün have. It was awful. He finished probably 35% from the field. But at the end of the day, it did not matter, because he had 20 points in the second half, and he ended up bringing the Rockets home. He had 7 boards. We'll mention in our podcast. He had 7 boards in overtime, and 5 of those were on the offensive end. His impact is going to be felt regardless, and that's the good thing about players. Once they get to a point, they still have off games, and they're still impacting in a positive way. That's huge. So it's rare you'll see a guy shoot 11 to 31 from the field and still be you know, pretty effective. So, yeah, I had to shout him out. He's definitely having a great season. I think if he keeps this up, he's definitely a lock for second team All-NBA.
Yeah, look, I hate to do this, man, because I want it to be – I'm not trying to be piled on Jalen Green, right? Like, I like Jalen Green, and I wish him well. I truly do wish him well. I want him to exceed and to succeed and excel in Phoenix. I truly do. But this is why I was really annoyed by a question that he was asked after he had that big game when he finally came back. And what did he have the most threes for somebody in their first Suns game or something like that? They had like 5 threes, whatever it was. And somebody asked him after the game about, like, have you ever played with this much floor spacing? And I was like, man, even to whatever degree that's true, that the Suns now have more spacing than the Rockets ever had when he was here. Like, it that whole point was void of the nuance of him being part of the issue with the spacing. Like, you know, like I feel like the spacing is a lot better here now that Kevin Durant is here. Ask Alperen Şengün about that. And he himself was, you know, part of the issue there. And it wasn't that he couldn't shoot. It was that he couldn't shoot consistently, like with any kind of degree of reliability and regularity. It's like he might be like he was on that Suns night. The first,
some days
the first
he can't miss, some days he can't make.
Exactly.
And there's never any in between.
Exactly. And so that helter-skelter nature of it was a spacing issue in and of itself. And so, like, I'm like, man, I'm not trying to knock this guy, and I'm wishing him well, but I'm really knocking the question asker in that point. It was like, man, I don't think you're – like, I think you're missing some important context about the spacing issues that the Rockets had and the fact that they just got rid of one of the guys that created it, that helped create it.
Yeah, that's also huge... why – go ahead, Will.
Well, yeah, that's why I really wasn't like, it's not this ain't the Suns podcast, but like that Jalen Green game he had against the Suns, I've seen that game a million times. He's done mm-hmm. that in a Rockets jersey a million times. What happened there is he hit a lot of threes. And that was one of the things I said on my podcast, on my TikToks, all that good stuff. I want to see Jalen Green impact the game without hitting threes. Because at this point, I'm just being realistically. I don't expect him to shoot because I don't even look it up, but he was like, what, 6 or 7 threes that night?
So he like, shot maybe 13, six of them. That's
I think
the
he had like six of them.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a great shooting like, game.
He's like, what, 40-something percent, 45, 46%? 46. Yeah, yeah, bro. If he shoots 46 from three on 13 attempts per game, he's the greatest shooter of all time. So, like, it's obviously not sustainable. What can you do when that's not falling? And that's why, like, for me, I don't really, last season, I was never moved by those games where he dropped 30 because he hit 7 threes. It's like, bro, you're not going to do that every single night. And we saw that in the playoffs where game 2 hit a bunch of threes, games 1 and then 3 through 7, he hit a bunch of threes. And it didn't matter. So he's just like, what do you do when that doesn't happen? So not to, I guess, crap on Jalen, but it's just like, that's why that didn't move me. And that's why, like, for me, it's going to have to be a little bit more before I'm like, oh, man.
And just to be clear, that wasn't to pile on Jalen. That was to kind of point out the difference, like really more so of what you have now versus what you had before. You know, again, not to pile on him, but it is just that. And it would be different. Like we're talking about Kevin Durant here, right? That's the conversation. So Kevin Durant would be different from pretty much almost anybody, but especially from what you had before. It's night and day. And now you feel like, again, when you're making those rallies, right? No lead is safe in the NBA. I don't care who you're playing. Right. But now at the end, you feel like not only can we come back, but we can finish the game.
I think a big thing, too, is, and I won't even speak on Jalen in this topic, but Kevin Durant just has so much gravity. I think that's the main thing, too. When he touches the rock, you're going to see 2-3 guys show. Right. That's how good he is. Right. I think it was against the Memphis Grizzlies. He got the rock. And he was looking at the fan like, what the hell kind of defense is this? Right. So, yeah, he's going to get that much attention. And that's the game changer, too. And that's another reason why I think the spacing is so much better. And another topic in itself, it's the reason why the Rockets rarely take any threes, because they just wait to get a really good look and then they take those. And that's why they're the best three-point shooting team in the league right now. So just get a bunch of good looks and you force feed Şengün and KD. So it's a great recipe. But, yeah, I wanted to jump to Amen Thompson. He's the last guy on our tier. We do have around 30 minutes left. So, of course, if you're still in here, right now we have around 40-ish. Throw in some questions. I'll start the ones and we can get back to those when the time comes. But we'll start with Amen Thompson. You know, he had a stretch where he was diamond a little better. He was averaging around 8-ish assists, kept the TOs low. But I have really, really high expectations for Amen Thompson. He's a hooper, right? I think he can go out there, and we've had people say he could be an all-star this year. He's not playing at an all-star caliber at this point in time. And luckily, the Rockets are deep, right? They're 9-3, so it hasn't made too much of a difference. But I do expect him to pick it up eventually. But right now, he is struggling. So I'll kick it to Will. He's Ben Thompson FC. So
I'll let him speak. I'm the president, man.
He's the president.
Yeah, so no, he's playing bad. Simple. Like, I don't even want to sugarcoat it. He's playing awful. And it has nothing, like, the biggest thing that's kind of frustrating me with Amen Thompson right now, or the discourse around it, is two things. It's one, people trying to say that the reason he's struggling is because he's playing point guard. No, he's not. That's, like, I don't, to me, that's a cop out. He's not really playing point guard. If you watch the Rockets, what Amen Thompson does is he gets the ball across half court and then he passes it to Şengün or he passes it to KD. A point guard, Chris, what Chris Paul does when he was in his prime, what Steve Nash, what all the other point guards, they were the ones initiating the action. He don't initiate actions. He doesn't run pick and rolls. He doesn't do that. He's not playing point guard. He passes the ball to Şengün, who is, honestly, Şengün's our point guard. Şengün plays point guard. He gets the ball to Şengün and then goes stands dunker spot. But that's what he does. So, like, to tell me that's why he's struggling is because he's playing point guard. No, that's not what it is. He's missing layups, bro. He was missing layups whether or not the box score said he was playing point guard or small forward. That's my first point. My second point is it's similar to Reed Shepard, right? People want to do the whole thing about, all right, we're 12 games into, where are we, 12, 11? But we're 9-3, so we're 12 games in. Yeah, so we're 12 games into the season. Everybody wants to say, oh, yeah, he sucks. It's because of this or that. I'm like, bro, it's 12 games. Like, if we're, and mind you, of the 12 games, he has not been bad for all 12. Now, he's been bad for, like, 8 of them, I'll tell you that. But, like, mm-hmm. he's had some good, like, some really good games in this 12-game sample size. So it's not like he's just been out there stinking a bit. And mind you, the other thing, too, is like Amen Thompson being bad is still, what is he averaging? 17, 6, and 5. Well, not the best splits because he can't shoot from three at all. And like his defense isn't quite where it was last season. He's still a great defender, right? So it's not like he's out there point shaving. It's not like he's out there and you're worse because he's on the court. We're mad because we expect better from Amen Thompson. That's what, if I thought Amen was a bum, bro, I'd be saying, bro, you doing what you're supposed to be doing. But because I expect better from you, I want better than 17 points on 54 true shooting, right? But, yeah, so it's more the things where it's just like I feel like people are trying to, like, jump the gun and try to say he's just a bum now or he's bad and try to diagnose it as anything other than he's playing scary. That's what I'm watching. He's not being aggressive. I say this all the time. We watch the games. Good things happen when Amen Thompson puts 2 feet in the paint. And he doesn't do that enough right there. And you can't tell me it's because the defenses are just locked in on him. Bro, they had CJ McCollum picking him up against the Wizards. You're telling me CJ McCollum was stopping the Mentos from getting to the paint? Like, he's playing scared. I think he doesn't trust his handle right now. He's afraid of – I think he's overthinking the game. I think it's something, too, where it's like there was a level of comfort in knowing, okay, I am, like, the fourth or fifth option, and I'm just going to kind of get in where I fit in, as opposed to now where it's like, well, no, we kind of need you to do it. You know, so I think there's a different level of, like, comfort with that. I think he's kind of learning and adjusting to being required to play the way we need him to play. And I think all these things are kind of messing with him. Because like I said, he's missing layups, bro. He's missing floaters. He's not attacking CJ McCollum POA. Like, stuff like that has nothing to do with what position he plays or, you know, what other excuse people are coming up with for why he's playing. He's just playing bad because he's in his own head. He's not playing the way he's supposed to be. And that's why, like, one, I'm not concerned. I'm not even, like, remotely concerned at all. I'm going to say he's probably going to have a good game tomorrow.
Cleveland. It'll be a good game.
He'll have a good game against Cleveland. I put it on wax, bro. We're going to look better yet tomorrow. So, like, I'm not worried at all about him. I just need him to get out of his own head and figure out what he needs to do.
So I'll say this real quick. I had to compare the stats to last year. His shot types, right? In the restricted area, he's shooting elite, same as last year, around 73% in the restricted area. But in the paint is where there's a huge drop off, around a 20% decrease in field goal percentage. Last year, he was around 45% in the paint. So, you know, floaters or anything that's right outside the restricted area. This year, he's shooting on 3.6 attempts, 23.3%, which is in the 15th percentile.
What was the volume last season?
That'll take me 5 seconds to grab, and I got you right now. But that's just, Amen Thompson, his touch was better last year. Last year it was 2.6 a game.
So it went up by one shot.
Yeah, he's taking one.
So he's taking one. Games. Yeah, and you're telling me that
he's making less,
like,
now.
Yeah, bro. Like, I'm sorry. That has nothing to do with what position he's playing. It has nothing to do with his play style. That's on Amen Thompson. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? That's why, like, I'm not. Part of the reason why I'm not, I would be a bit more concerned if I thought it was the position he was playing, because then I'd be like, oh, snap, this guy may not be that good. But I know that it's because of it's him, you know what I'm saying? And he's going to snap out of it. So I'm not even worried.
Yeah, it's not even that. Like, it's also, I mean, we know Amen Thompson isn't the best jump shooter, but last year, 38% for mid-range. This year, he's 29%. Last year, shooting 37% in the corner. And this year, the volume isn't that much different, only 0.5 more a game. And he's shooting 13% from the corner this year. I'm not going to ask a lot from him above the break, but he should be hitting the corner threes at least. I saw it last year. I think he can do it now. The work ethic he has, the amount of time and effort he puts in those kind of things, I believe it'll click eventually. But I believe Will's right. I think he is in his own head a little bit. It's been 12 games. I think he'll get back to that groove. But yeah, the efficiency in those areas outside of the restricted area is where he just needs to improve. He's going to be dominant when he gets to the rim. That's going to happen, right? But just the touch has to be better. That's the main thing. I wanted to speak on some questions. Y'all are asking some good ones about his defense. I'll get to those in a second. I've started a few of them. I want to jump to what B. Scott has to say first.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think Will did, and you mentioned in some of the what I would call finishing stats. Like, point blank, he's not finishing in the paint, and he can't buy a jump shot. And, like, you can't score the paint. Like, if it's not a flat-out dump or layup, he's not making a shot, you know? And so that's the issue. We're approaching now about damn near 2 weeks that it's been since he had a good game that wasn't against the Wizards. You know, that wasn't against the worst team in the league, you know, so it's like we're having a or at least not a up to standard. I don't want to say a good game, but like not an up to standard, to Will's point, up to standard, a Amen Thompson game. So, yeah, man, I expect for at some point the regression to the mean and for him to at least start finishing. Now, his jump shot, we already know, is a work in progress. And I think we can kind of live with him not being the greatest jump shooter. I would agree that, like, kind of with the stated theme of the team wanting to shoot more corner threes and be better at that, like, you know, he's got to be able to do that. It's funny, I went from early in the season liking how aggressive it seemed like he was. Remember we shoot all them threes early on and like OKC is like, okay, I got all right.
Seven threes in that game. He took seven.
And I like the confidence, even though he wasn't really hitting them. I like the confidence. Now, you know, I'm kind of like, well, it's like my confidence has kind of gone down a little bit with his confidence, it seems like. He's in his head now, I'm in my head about it. But the things that we expect him to do, the finishing at the rim, the being as effective as he is in the dunker spot. And I will say this to his credit, like, he is playing bad. I just said it, like, it's been 2 weeks now since he's had a really good game that wasn't against the Wizards. But he does still make a lot of winning plays. You know, and so, like, even in the midst of a not so great game, I respect that. Like, I can still appreciate it, and I'm a ride with Amen Thompson. So he has not been good as of late, but I do expect that to improve pretty soon.
I will say this to give him some credit: I'm impressed with his free throw shooting so far. You know, 76% is much better than years past. The last two games, actually 11 for 11 from the free throw line combined. So I do want to give him credit there. I do believe free throw shooting is a reflection of someone's jump shot eventually, right? So I think it'll come along eventually, right? So we'll see. I think he is in his own head.
I'm glad you mentioned that though, Brad, because I want him to get to the line even more, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's had some games where he's got to the line. He's had some games where he hasn't, to the point of this improved free throw shooting. I'd like to see him, you talk about him not being aggressive enough, be more aggressive, force the issue, at least in that way, right? You're not getting – the shots aren't falling. How do you get some easy buckets? How can you start to watch the ball go through the net, get to the free throw line? That should open things up, I think, for the rest of his game.
Can you
– let's – go ahead.
Can you pull up that question?
Thompson's offense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah,
so to answer your question, no. I think Amen Thompson has to be a bit more on ball. I mean, it define if the goal of this team is to win a championship, right? If we're just trying to go out there and have fun, sure, you can put the dunker spot. But like, you're talking about winning a championship? No, it has to be some off the dribble creation in there. I'm not saying he has to be out there on some James Harden twinsy step back three, and nor am I saying he needs to like lead the team in off the dribble shots. We still have Kevin Durant, we still have Alperen Şengün. But no, I cannot relegate him exclusively to a dunker spot shot diet if we're trying to go out there and win. We don't have enough guys on this team for men to have that role, right? Like, I love Jabari and Tari. Those are play finishers. Okogie's a play finisher. Reed Shepard is looking like he can have some on-ball juice, but even then, he's kind of more of on the perimeter kind of thing. You're not telling a guy who's, like, breaking on defense with his handle. I need Amen Thompson to be able to attack a closeout, to say there's a weaker defender on me, I'm going to get to the rim. To say I'm going to take this screen, get head downhill. I need him to be able to do that this season. I don't need him to be perfect at it. I don't need him to be the best he's ever going to be at it. But I need him to be able to do some of it this season. And like I said, right now, he's just not. And I don't think that's because if people are talking about defenses have figured him out and he's just nothing. I'm like, that's not what it is, bro. You're not going to convince me that's what the problem is when I'm watching him get guarded by like I said, like weaker defender. He's not looking to be aggressive. And the few possessions where he does look to be aggressive, good things pretty happen. He's also like playing a bit sped up at times, right? Where it's like you're making it more difficult on yourself. And it's like, I think those are things that he can control right now. So like, yeah, no, I got it. It's for me, it's all on him. It's nothing to do with nothing other than a mentor needs to wake up. Let me watch some film, work on like some areas where he can pick his spots a bit better. But he's gonna be fine. But to answer your question, no, it's gotta be some on the ball stuff. Maybe not say all of it, but it's gotta be some.
Hey, point about being sped up, that's always been a knock or a criticism for me of the what used to be the Terror Twins. I guess we're not calling them that no more. Everybody's kind of moved past that, but like that, it was the gift and the curse of being the Terror Twins. Like they come in there and it's like breakneck energy, fast pace, and they're applying pressure on defense. But sometimes when they get the ball in their hands, it's like, oh, slow down a second. Like just slow down for a moment. And I think Amen Thompson has had a lot of that in his game in the past, and you're seeing a lot of it now with him having the ball more in his hands more. And it's just an adjustment he's got to make. We were talking about this earlier with Reed Shepherd of just like repetition and getting a chance to do it. Now, Amen Thompson has had a lot more opportunity than Reed Shepherd has. And so you would have that expectation that he would be further along than Reed Shepherd is. But I'm not tremendously worried about it, man. I think with time, it'll get better. And I think having guys like Alperen Sengun and Kevin Durant to kind of lean on, I think buys you time with Amen Thompson. If it was just like, hey, the Amen Thompson show, you know, that would be a much different story. But to the point, you do need him to be a lot better than what he's been.
Yeah, I'll say this as well on the topic of Amen being in the dunker spot. Again, Amen, he can excel in a bunch of ways. Last year, I thought a way he excelled was when Fred was on the ball, they would pretty much just stick Amen in the corner. If they were to run a pick and roll and Fred was getting to the rim, Amen would cut and that'd be a bunch of lobs in that way. And if not, again, he shot 37% on threes. So they would pretty much kind of stick him in the corner or throw him anywhere and he would find a way to get a bucket. You know, it comes with, you know, a guard that knows what they're doing. So I think the more comfortable Reed gets, the more you'll see Amen get some of those buckets in that way. But I mean, for now, I agree with Will. He does need to be more comfortable on ball. He can attack the rim at will and get to the cup whenever he wants to. I've seen him do it a bunch of times. I'd like to see him do that. And as B. Scott mentioned, you know, attack hard and he'll get fouled and get to the cup and get to the free throw line. He's hitting 75.9% of his free throws this year. So that's good for Amen Thompson. So on the defensive notes, it is a little different this year. I don't think he's playing in the exact same spot. I mean, we saw him last year. He's averaging 1.4 steals last year, 1.3 this year, but the blocks are way down. That's the main difference. He's not playing down low as much as he was last year. But again, I do think he'll get back to the norm. I'm not worried about Amen Thompson. We're 12 games in.
Didn't he have a key block against Orlando? Am I tripping?
You're probably not. Off the top of my head, I'm not. Sengun had a key block.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Amen had a block. Maybe it's not.
I'm going. I have his game log pulled up.
Maybe it's Portland.
Portland, maybe. He didn't have a block against Portland. Orlando.
It's Portland that I'm thinking about. It's Portland. Yeah. It's Portland. But you see the flashes is the point I'm getting. Like you still see. It's not like he forgot how to play defense or he can't play defense no more. It was a flash in the pan and, you know, it was a fluke or nothing like that. It's just, yeah, no, I think that you still see enough from him defensively to still feel pretty good about him being like a perennial all NBA defensive guy.
Yeah, he's probably still going to make it just by virtue of him being on one of the best defenses in the league. Because I don't know if Josh Okogie has enough PR to get the nod.
He's been the best defender.
Got to start that campaign, dog. Got to start that campaign, Josh Okogie.
Let's see, pull up the film from that game so I can see.
Yeah, go ahead.
What block you're referring to?
I was gonna say this really quickly. Red Sky made a good point. He wanted to see more minutes with Amen and Reed. I pulled it up. The net rating on those two in 155 minutes is a 17.2. So again, they're outscoring teams by 17.2 points per 100 possessions when Reed and Amen Thompson share the floor. They played 155 minutes, plus 73. That's really good. That's really good. So I would not be opposed. I mean, that's the end game. You draft two guys in the top four, you want them to play well together. So that is eventually going to be the Rockets 1 and 2, you know, for the future. So I do believe, you know, we'll see more of those two together. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, they've been excellent together this season. Rocket Zone will keep getting better as the season goes on. It's been a hot topic.
I think there's a ceiling to how good a zone can, or rephrase, the way we run it. Now, if they want to run like some hybrid pill and replace zones, that's different. But we've been running like the most basic 2-3 zones. I would say we did kind of advance it a little bit last time.
I agree.
But for the most part, like, if you're going to run it that way, there's a ceiling. You can't.
So my issue with it was against San Antonio, and specifically, they were running the zone and they weren't showing any other looks. It was like, hey, we're going to run a 2-3 zone. And San Antonio was like, okay, bet. We're going to go down and pull out the basic, okay, this is how you beat a 2-3, throw a guy in the middle and throw the ball around, get an open shot. Right. In that last game against Orlando, I see they would go zone and they go right back to man. I just think it's got to be, you got to mix it up. You can't let the defense, you let the offense know exactly what you're doing before the, you know, the play starts. So that's what they did more last year too. It was, again, I said this before, but they talked about it on the Mind of the Game podcast. Ime would throw a look for three straight possessions, then we'll switch it up for a few and then go back and forth. And, you know, that complexity is important. So, again, just don't – if you're going to run zone, don't just run zone every single play, right? So, I do think it'll get better as well, especially when Dorian Finney-Smith comes back, because I've mentioned that he's really good at protecting the rim as well for a non-big. So, I think it's going to be important. But
hey, so the block I was talking about was not a key block. It was in the second quarter against the Portland Trail Blazers. He blocked Shaedon Sharpe's layup at the rim. And it was just one of those – y'all know Amin has these – like a crazy athletic play where you're like, yo, dang, that dude is jumping so quick, like jumps so much quicker than pretty much everybody else. So it was one of those. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a key block. It was just an impressive one, an impressive athletic feat. But to the zone point, I do want to say this, though, because I felt like the first time we talked about the zone, out of the three of us, I was the biggest zone defender at the time. And I'm out on the zone, bro. Like, I want to be on the record with that, since I was on the record before saying, you know, I think they can kind of run it a little bit, and I like when they mix it up. I'm out on it, man. I'm out on it. I don't really like, and I think Will was making this point when we talked about it before, of like the zone in the NBA or when you're playing against high caliber players. Like, it's one thing to run a zone against us. It's another thing, like, if we're out there balling, but it's another thing to run against, like, the NBA caliber players that they're running against. And I'm just like, man, y'all are good enough to just guard your man. Guard your man. The only cone that they got out there really is Reed Shepherd, and we're even seeing him improve a little bit in that area. So, and I know a lot of it is to kind of, you know, shield him a little bit, and it's also to protect him a little bit, and it's also to, you know, change up the looks and everything. But I just think that they're good enough defensively in terms of coaching principles, scheme, actual ability to just guard your man. And so I would like to see that. Like, I'm good on the zone at this point after having watched it now for you know, 3 weeks since the last time we talked about it. I'm good on it. Good.
Again, I just think they got to switch it up. Don't be so consistent running zone. Like, throw different looks, and maybe it'll be good.
Maybe I think it was probably the offensive rebounds that they gave up against San Antonio. I think that was my final straw. I was like, all right, guys, y'all aren't nobody's gonna rebound. Y'all not gonna board. To hell with this damn zone. So anyway,
yeah,
kick my soapbox now.
Yeah, we'll fry the team on his TikTok after that San Antonio game. I had a cousin text me. He was like, "Will going hard on the Rockets right now, huh?" I was like, "What you mean?" I watched the TikTok. And you were just saying it was an elementary zone, you know, this and that. And I told my cousin, I was like, I don't disagree with him. I mean, that's almost awful. So
I ain't even doing that.
It's gotta go.
Because that's what happens when you record when you're pissed up. But I wanted to speak on what we have right here. You know, injuries coming in, you want to make sure Katie and Shangun stay healthy. I'm sure they're fine with the pressure. But, yeah, you know, I'm looking at the minutes played per game. You know, Shangun's at 36.8, and it's going to come with those OT games that we've had. And Durant is at 36.1. You know, ideally, the more blowouts the Rockets have, the better. Those minutes are going to go down. But when you have those OT games, of course, minutes will inflate. So the more the Rockets take care of business, the less minutes those two guys will play. You know, Kevin Durant is obviously a guy we need for the playoffs. Not worried about the injuries to a major degree. Again, he played in 83% of his games the last 2 years with the Phoenix Suns. which is a pretty good number, right? 75 games 1 year, 62 the next. He sat out the rest of the season because it was cooked. But I think KD will be fine. Of course, you want to keep the minutes. I would say lower than 36, but again, he's played in three overtime periods. I think double OT and OT against Orlando. So it's 15 extra minutes right there. So I think it's good. I don't, again, expect anything crazy to happen, but I think those minutes per games will go down. I just want to speak on that.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
I would just say on the minutes thing too, if I could take another moment to praise the fact that Josh Okogie is kind of one of the surprises of the year. I think when they get Dorian Finney-Smith back, look, I'm not trying to say that Dorian Finney-Smith is going to fill any of the roles of the guys that we're concerned about with minutes, right? They do different things. But I do think it helps that they got like an extra player, a part of their rotation, right? Like they, at some point they'll have more bodies, more guys that they can throw out there. You'll still need those guys to do what they've been doing and to play the minutes, at least the important minutes that they play down the stretch. But I look at it as a positive that it looks like you have at least an extra rotational player on your roster, on top of the fact that, again, guys like Reed Shepherd and Jabari Smith Jr. seem to be taking that step.
Yeah. This is a good question from Red Sky. I am curious to see how the team will look at full health. Again, I've been saying this. I do believe Dorian Finney-Smith will start eventually. Shoot, maybe it's Reed Shepherd, the way he's been playing. But I'm curious to see what y'all think, at full strength, what the lineup would look like. We saw it yesterday. Capella didn't play at all. I think that's what's going to happen towards
the end. And he should not.
Yeah. Wood is like Capella. He's been okay. So I think off the bench, if DFS is starting, you're going to have, of course, Reed, you got Josh Okogie, Tari, and then Steven Adams. If I'm missing someone off the bench, let me know. But I think they'll just go with that 9-man rotation. That would be my guess. I don't think I miss anybody. But
that'll
be my assumption.
That's the rotation. The question, I think that's the rotation pretty solid. The question is just going to be who is going to be the starter and who's going to get the bulk of the minutes out of those last, let's put Steven Adams aside, but out of those other three guys, where does Dorian Finney-Smith ultimately end up falling in the pecking order? I don't necessarily have an answer. Like I'm in wait and see observer mode to see what does he have when he comes back? What is the expectation when he comes back, minutes restriction, all that kind of stuff, playing back-to-backs and, the load management, as we like to call it. Like, they're going to have to figure that out. And, it's going to be – I got a tough time. I was one of the people that said that Dorian Finney-Smith will probably be a starter before I realized he was going to be out as long as he was or has been. But I got a tough time thinking now that he's just going to come in and be like a, day one starter or be ready to do that. Maybe he is, I don't have a great sense for how far along and how great he is with the recovery, with this recovery process or anything, but he's definitely going to be in the mix. I just want to see what that pecking order is going to look like. But I think the 9-man rotation is going to be exactly how you described it.
I'll say this. We have 1 minute left for the show. I wanted to ask y'all a question before we get off. Rockets have a good stretch of games coming up before our next show on Tuesday. So we have the Cavs on Wednesday, as we've discussed. Friday, in-season tournament game against the Nuggets. And then on Monday, they'll play the Phoenix Suns. Again, no Jalen Green. But a quick record prediction. I want to see what y'all got. I'm hoping they go 3-0. I think they can go 3-0. They swept the Cavs last year. I think we're a better team than last year. So give me a win against the Cavs. Give me a win against Denver. They play Denver really well, and they're at home. And I'm not worried about Phoenix. Shout out to them for having a good start so far. I'm going 3-0. So what y'all got? What's our rule?
We lose to the Nuggets, but we beat the Suns and Cavs.
Okay.
I like the 3-0 energy that you're bringing, Brad. Let's go with that, man. Let's go with that. And it's not hopium. I could actually, this team is playing well enough. And obviously, Denver is one of the better teams in the league, going to be right there at the top of the West. But I got them going 3-0 in this stretch, man. Let's go.
Yes, sir. Again, appreciate y'all for listening. That's an hour, 50 of y'all here. None of y'all are subscribed. Please do. We're trying to run it up this year. Leave a comment. Let us know what you thought on the show. And again, every Tuesday, 8:30 Eastern, you're going to see us right here. So appreciate y'all for tapping in, and we'll be back soon.